Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome back Dr. Cynthia McKinney. I should also say Congresswoman McKinney, who comes into us from Bangladesh. I just had the privilege of meeting with her there and had a smashing, not just a smashing good time, but a very intellectually rich time. And I was so concerned about what's been happening in Congress and the passing of the sanctions bill and the president saying he'll sign it that I asked her if she would come back on and update us about what has been happening. And so I couldn't be more pleased. She has an incredible teaching schedule. So this is a very busy person. And Dr. McKinney, we're very honored that you have graced our presence this evening.
Well, I'm very honored to have been asked by the one and only Catherine Austin Fitz to address and chat with her and have that available to her devoted followers. So let's go on it.
Well, it was funny, right before we started to record, I was updating you on our work about the missing money, and that's how you and I met. Well, it was 2003, and KPFA radio was, I was trying to warn them about trillions missing, and they thought I was full of yaya. And then the radio host had been interviewing me, got you on, and he asked you about it, and you said, oh yes, it's absolutely true. And from then on, we were off to the races. So we're still trying to get that missing money back, and more keeps going missing. So but let's turn to the sanctions. We've just had the Congress pass a sanctions bill. The president saying he's going to sign it. I haven't checked to see if he signed it yet. Tell us about that sanctions bill. What is it and why is it so important?
The bill is extremely dangerous. It also, I believe, is a case study in how the warmongers, the empire builders, the globalists, the Zionists, whatever you want to call them, this is a case study in how they operate. The legislation imposes sanctions against North Korea, Iran, and Russia. The legislation received a number. It was introduced on July 21st without a number. So that means that it was drafted by somebody, for somebody, introduced, and was not given a number for 4 days until July 25th at 7:50 a.m., the legislation received a number. And before 6 o'clock on the very same day, the 184-page bill had been passed by both the House, sent to the Senate, and the next day was on its way to the president.
Has the president signed it yet?
So basically, the bill, you see, now they haven't even, this is amazing. Now I'm looking at the write-up. It was introduced on 7/21 without a number. Now, the congressional record has been amended to reflect that it was introduced on 7/24. It was actually introduced 7/21, and it was on the majority leader's calendar for consideration under suspension for the week that it was introduced. This is unheard of. This is absolutely, totally unheard of.
Right.
And 7:25, at 7:50 in the morning, it got a number, which was 3364. And then the same day, 7:25, even if I go with what is listed on congress.gov for the bill, H.R. 3364, introduced 724, and became law. And so now it is law. It was subjected to two roll call votes, but the bill went through the House at 5:14 p.m. It was voted on 7:25. That's the first day it got a number. On 7:27, it passed the Senate without amendment, which meant that it immediately went to the president. And the president has signed it now,
okay,
and it is law. This is a very dangerous bill. First of all, let's talk about the irregular order. Well, you will hear members of Congress, and they will say, regular order. They will be shouting, regular order, regular order. And what that means is that something irregular has happened. And this, the trajectory of this particular legislation is most irregular. That you
right.
have a bill introduced on the 24th, according to congress.gov, and it is law on the 27th. Now, this is amazing. This is absolutely, totally amazing.
No, it's also amazing. The vote in the House was, I think, 419 to 3. There were only three Congress people who voted against it.
That's correct. Three Republicans.
Right.
And in the Senate, two senators, one Democrat, one Republican. The Democrat is Bernie Sanders, and the Republican is Rand Paul.
Right.
So in all, you can say that we the people, have five members of Congress.
Right.
The rest of them are shouting the Russia interfered in our elections meme ad nauseum.
Right, but regardless of who or what interfered with our election, this sanction bill is pushing us towards a very serious possibility of war.
Absolutely. And the Russians have already said that this bill should not, well, before the president signed it, there was hope beyond hope, that the president wouldn't sign it. And unfortunately, though, the president did sign it, and it passed both the House and the Senate with veto-proof margins. So the president vetoing it would have been just an act of defiance, saying, in essence, that I am not going to allow a war bill to proceed under my name or, you know, under my watch kind of thing. Unfortunately, the sanctions bill now has passed the House and the Senate, signed by the president, the law of the land, and now you have the Russians who are responding. And what have the Russians said so far? The Russians have said that that bill is a declaration of war. Imagine that. So it's a declaration of a trade war, which is the the qualifier that the Russian government has added, but the bottom line is still the same, that this is very dangerous legislation, 184 pages, that quite frankly, probably the members of Congress themselves had not read, because how are you going to read 184 pages when you're doing all the rest of the work that you have to do? And it was considered under suspension. Now, when you put legislation on the suspension calendar, that means that it's not controversial. And if you look at the margin of the vote, of course it wasn't controversial. And if you look at the margin of the vote without looking at the content of the bill, but any bill that is going to raise the hackles on Russia to the point that they say uncategorically that the United States Congress has just passed a declaration of a trade war against Russia, I don't know what more we can do. It's so very serious.
It's well, I want to get it. There are a lot of related subjects that I want to get into on this. I was watching, I don't know if you ever saw a purported whistleblower FBI Anon, supposedly somebody from inside the FBI who was leaking, you know, it could be disinformation, and he was, he provided some information about the pay-to-play network around the Clinton Foundation and was basically describing a network that involved a tremendous number of people throughout Washington. He implied it could bring down the government if the truth came out. And essentially, you know, they were selling massive favors globally to many foreign governments. So we're talking about massive government, foreign government interference in the U.S. governance and elections both. And somebody asked him during the discussion, why does Hillary Clinton want to go to war with Russia? And he said that's what the donations was buying. In other words, you've got global interests who are basically buying a war. Now, if you look at what happened with Libya, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
You know, basically Clinton engineered the destruction of, you know, or sort of the approval of, with Obama, of the destruction of Libya, and sort of syndicated out, you know, who got the gold, who got the oil, and syndicated it out, and you know, it certainly appeared like it was part of the pay-to-play network with everybody who was making money carving up Libya, giving donations to the Clinton Foundation, and God knows what was else going on behind the scene. But so you look at the voting in Congress and you say, you know, this is basically going to destroy America, and essentially is the money pouring into these Congress, you know, both the representatives in the House and the senators, is basically, are they being bought by global interests to start a war?
Okay. You know, having been there, what I believe is operating is just, you know, it's a nice life being a member of Congress. And so you say, okay, there's some bills that are money bills. There's some committees that are money committees. And the really ambitious members of Congress who, you know, who are more ambitious than they are moral, they seek those money committees, and they're always on the money side of the money bill. And
right.
Maybe I'm talking, you know, I'm giving too much inside game, but, and I have seen members of Congress actually laugh at basically how stupid the people are that allow them to get away with voting for money bills, and then they go back home and they have this elaborate justification that's been provided in talking points
right.
by lobbyists, et cetera. And so it's kind of like a game, a cynical game. Well, let me just see how much I can get away with. And now that's for the more ambitious ones. Generally, those are the ones who have come in knowing how the game is played, or they've been there long enough to understand that some things you mess with, some things you don't mess with, most things you don't mess with. You certainly don't mess with any money bills. And that's the way that you stay in office.
Right.
And the perks of staying in office are great because people look up to you. You get to go anywhere in the world you want to go. You're received by everyone. And so it's not really a matter of providing representation to the citizens
right.
who elected you. It just is that the citizens now have a representative who's not very good at representing them. And
right.
that's always forgiven by the citizens. So if you've been there for 10 years, then you're going to be there for 15 years, 20 years, as long as you choose to be there until you get on the wrong side of the money people.
Right.
And as I think I might have mentioned before, that you have one set, the Ziocons have this all figured out, where you've got one set of people who play on the House side, and then you've got an entirely different set of money people, players, who play on the Senate side. Now, how do I know that? Because I was talking to one House member who said that she was going to run for the Senate. She eventually ran for the Senate, and she was successful, and she won. And she came back and told me, Cynthia, you wouldn't believe that there's a whole different set of players on the Senate side. And so now I would presume that you get to interact with the millionaires on the House side and you get to interact with the billionaires on the Senate side is probably
right.
the way it's divided up. In the end, though, everybody gets a senator or everybody gets a congress member except the people, except the voters.
Right.
And so it's the ultimate pay-to-play scam from top to bottom.
Right. Right. And so we now have Congress basically voting. Well, and let me just say that when I read an article about 30 days after Scalise was shot, which I believe was a professional hit. I no more think it was just a wacko than the man in the moon. But apparently 30% of House Republicans had received death threats as of 30 days after Scalise's shooting. So I would say that it's not just, you know, trying to please the money interests. I think there's also some real fear if you don't play ball, things could get bad for you.
I think that's always been there.
Yes.
So it wasn't, we're going to shoot you maybe, but we can tell your wife what you did on that trip to Vegas.
Right.
You know, so, yeah. Maybe that's what anthrax was about as well.
Right.
You stay quiet.
Right.
We know that there's lots of questions on September 11th, but you just stay quiet.
Right. So the reality is the people that are basically controlling from behind the scenes, you know, they're prepared to play very rough.
Yes, they are.
And so the question is, who are they? You know, I would like to point out one thing. I don't mean to be conspiratorial, but when I was on Wall Street, the number one most important meeting every year was the Bohemian Grove. And this bill went into effect, you know, after the Grove came together for their first week. Now, in my experience, the appropriations, you know, it all went around appropriations and money, but the appropriation bills got worked out by Congress. They went on recess, you know, sometime in June. then the Grove met in July and would make the decisions and then tell everybody what to do. And then when everybody got back after Labor Day, it would all get implemented. So all the big, you know, sort of policy issues and money issues would emerge up, and then the decisions would be made, and then boom, it would roll out.
Yeah.
So I find the timing of when this bill came out versus when the Grove met to be very interesting.
Well, there's no doubt at all
that
this bill had an irregular trajectory. Basically, you're talking about one legislation that has resulted in Russia kicking out over 700 U.S. embassy employees that are in Moscow.
Right, and the Russians have been very patient because we kicked them out. We kicked Russian diplomats out. I'm trying to remember if it was November or December. And they've been very patient waiting for a turn. So they're only now matching what we did quite a while ago.
I have adopted the Paul Craig Roberts theory. Well, not theory, but belief, I guess, that the Russians have been too accommodating to lunatics, crazies, and unscrupulous people. I mean, and in the end, people who want to go to war with Russia. So, like, in international relations theory, the realists, so the theorists are divided kind of into two camps, the idealists versus the realists. And so the realists are the ones who are the practitioners of realpolitik and who focus on war, the reasons for war, and they believe that despite the anarchy of the international system with the unpredictability of states, that basically the states act as rational actors in the international system. So now what happens when you've got a bunch of irrational people or people who are willing to do anything, including destroying, how can I say this, the host that serves them,
right,
to even destroy that so they can just move on to another host after they've prepared it.
Right.
And so I believe that the Russians have believed that the United States is a rational actor, because those who are pulling the policy strings are also rational actors.
Right.
And what I maintain is that, and have maintained for a long time, is that these people are not rational actors, and that Russia should be about the business of presuming and acting in the belief that, formulating their policy in the belief that these people are willing to go not just to play the game of chicken, but they're ready to go all the way, not just to the brink, but over the brink, over the cliff.
Now, I've worked with and dealt with some of the neocons, and you've worked and dealt with them as well, certainly for longer than I did. And, you know, I also believe that they're crazy. And the question is why? Leonard Cohen has a great line. He says they were blinded by the beauty of their weapons. But when you look at the trajectory of my guess as to what they got in terms of space weaponry, in terms of weather manipulation, in terms of being able to induce earthquakes or all sorts of other invisible surveillance and intelligence. So we've got a world of secret black budget technology, And ever since these guys got a hold of it, they've gotten drunk with power. It's almost turned them crazy. So my theory is they're blinded by the beauty of their weapons, but they could just be crazy.
It's an interesting thought that we need to contemplate, and we really do need to study it. Right. I believe it is a case study. George Herbert Walker Bush called these people the crazy relatives that you keep locked down in the basement. The problem now is that for whatever reason, and however they got there, they were smart enough to steal the key to the basement door.
Right.
And to subdue everybody in the house, come upstairs, and just completely take over and hold everybody hostage. Now, I actually have thought about this and slightly written about this with the Samson option, where I've discussed the Samson option of these people have written and they have said that you dare to take us down and we're going to take the whole world down.
Right.
And I don't believe that that's just idle talk. I think that they are willing to go over the cliff. And that is a calculation that the Russians and everybody else has to make. That's the calculation that we, the people of the United States, have to make. You know, I lament because I've been warning about this for 20 years. I look back and it's 20 years.
Right.
So now 20 years later, when we wake up and the crazy relatives down in the basement are holding us hostage. They've got tape on our lips. They've got us strapped to chairs, and nobody can move. How do we get ourselves out of this situation?
Well, but here's the thing. I don't think, you know, what you're describing, I'd be happy if we were at least there. I just got off the phone with a wonderful relative who was telling me, you know, how, I mean, he is obsessed with how horrible Trump is. And, you know, I said, wait a minute, you know, we had the Clintons and then George W. Bush and Obama, and they basically stole $50 trillion. And they were dropping SWAT teams into poor neighborhoods. They're, you know, the government's bringing in the drugs. They're dropping in SWAT teams, rounding up innocent kids, and putting them in slave labor camps. And that's been going on through Clinton, through Bush, through Obama, and that didn't bother you. But Trump bothers you? I mean, so to me, you've got the, you know, you've got a country that's in a trance. So I wish they were looking at the crazy guys who've taken over and realized, you know, this is bad and we got to do something. But they still can't see, you know, they still can't see what the real problem is. Many of them.
Well, you know, your analysis is so spot on. The only explanation that I could give is that you've got the people of the U.S. in the same kind of trance that neutralizes the efficacy and the effectiveness of black people in the U.S. who are suffering. There's a theorist who is now dead. Her name is Frances Cress Welsing. She was a medical doctor, I think. And then you've got Joy Degree, who is a PhD, and the two of them have come up with some very interesting explanations for why black people basically, it's inexplicable why we allow ourselves to be so totally, thoroughly dominated and oppressed and depressed. Joy's theory of the post-slavery traumatic syndrome. And so I don't know, you know, I can't say why white America has allowed itself to be put into this trance as well, instead of fighting. Maybe it's the ultimate betrayal. Maybe the ultimate betrayal is going on. And people are just can't recognize their gullibility in the betrayal. I have no explanation for why we are now where we are.
Well, I've watched, just because I dealt with the physical harassment, I really studied how the powers that be sort of buy and manipulate everybody. And I have to tell you, it's the biggest job program in the country. I mean, they put a tremendous investment into managing and manipulating the population and playing divide and conquer. And it is a very major investment of time and money. And of course, they have relational database technology and artificial intelligence with a surveillance. Remember, we are all paying them. We are all funding them to run the surveillance and intelligence that it is required to manipulate us. So if you can get 325 million Americans to pay you, you know, literally weekly in their payroll check to fund your surveillance and PSYOP operation on them, you know, then basically you have an infinite amount of money with which to manage them.
That's right. That's right. Right. And so, you know, I'm going back to the lecture I just gave today, your time, which is already tomorrow, my time. And
right.
I talk about Paulo Freire. And Paulo Freire gives us the mechanisms of oppression, one of which is divide and rule. And then he also gives us the tools for liberation, which are ways in which we can counter those mechanisms of oppression and liberate ourselves. The power of unity for liberation, organization, cultural synthesis, and cooperation. Those are his four tools for liberation. So if they are practicing the art of manipulation, mental conquest, divide and rule, and cultural hegemony so that we operate within a culture of oppression, such that we don't even recognize.
It's true, we don't. We don't recognize, right.
That's right. So then, if Brady's ideas are correct, then we have no choice but to organize, to cooperate, to unite for the purposes of liberation, and then to understand the way cultural hegemony works, and then to, he calls it cultural synthesis, so that we can take that hegemonic culture and throw it off and create something new.
Right.
Now, right. Does that mean that all of us have to do that? No, because it doesn't take all of us to be complicit. For them to win, what we need is just that critical mass.
Right.
I don't know what that critical mass in this case is. Generally, it's 20 to 25% of the population. Maybe it's 20 to 25% of the attentive population. The attentive population is no more than 5%.
So let me give you a new statistic. In March, congressional approval in the United States was 35%. You know what it is this week?
No.
10%.
Yeah, but everybody still loves their member of Congress.
Right.
And so what we have to be able to do, which is what UNRIG is actually doing. And we had our first mention on C-SPAN this week, and we had our first member of Congress home for the August recess confronted with the integrity pledge. So it was wonderful. And it shows that attentive public, if they respond, we can raise the consciousness of everyone else.
Tell us about the integrity pledge.
The integrity pledge basically is about election reform and a piece of legislation that has not yet been introduced, that has not been drawn up, but in the mind of the hashtag UNRIG co-founder, I would say that it's similar to the legislation that I introduced a long time ago, which was the Voters' Choice Act, that people can go to congress.gov and put my name in, McKinney, and voters, and you can find that bill. So it would be something very similar to that. Now, we all have our idea of what needs to be done. And so the position that I put forward in hashtag UNRIG is that we just need to come to the table. First, come to the table with no pre-imposed position. So for Robert David Steele, election reform is root, as he says it. But maybe there are other issues that are also root that need to be considered, and maybe the collective wisdom of the people after we come together is that there are other issues that are root that need to take priority. So the integrity pledge, basically, I believe, is that whatever this collective wisdom produces, that you're going to be on board with that, as opposed to the Israel First pledge.
Right.
And so now we all have to, so what we're putting on the table is basically, are you going to do the bidding of the collective wisdom of the people of the U.S. who have come together in unity for liberation, cooperation, the spirit of cooperation to avoid the manipulation and the divide and rule tactics that have been successful for throughout time? So now we're ready to just come together on that and then provide this collective guidance to those who basically belong.
But how can a congressman commit to do policies when they don't know what will be proposed?
That's the work of the people to propose the policies. From hashtag UNRIG should actually come up with a list of policy proposals as a result of our being on the road and hearing from the people. And this would be a diverse, the goal is to have a diverse set of people.
Right.
Then that that collective wisdom is put forward as a set of policy proposals. That then becomes the integrity pledge or whatever we want to call it. And it can, and because we're doing it now, or trying to do it now, we can actually have this ready for the 2018 election. That's the beauty of doing it now, so we can be ready. And then just as the Ziocons have the pledge or the paragraph that you have to write if you're a candidate, then we can also have present our position from the collective wisdom of the people to the candidates and see if they signed it or not.
Right. Right. So you won't. You're not going to ask them to sign it until you have the specifics.
Oh, they can't sign something that they don't.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. No.
Okay. So. Mueller has now impaneled a new grand jury. There was a grand jury for Michael Flynn over in Alexandria, but now they've impaneled a new one in Washington. And from everything, it seems that Mueller is now expanding the scope of the investigation, not just into Russian interference, but to take into account Trump's financials and business. My guess is from the beginning of time, he's recruited quite a team. Now, I have to say I agree with the president. I think Sessions and Mueller should both be fired. I can appreciate why he doesn't think he can pull that off. But, if you look at what the American people are paying for, they're paying for, the country to run the government system, not to play politics at great expense to everyone, and start a war. Because whoever wants that war, they're not doing it because it's going to make America great again.
Right.
So let me ask you the question. Who's going to benefit from the war? Who's going to make money? Who's going to be better off if we try and have a war with Russia?
Well, if the United States engages in a war with Russia, the possibility exists that Iran, China, Russia, and the United States will all be destroyed.
Right.
I could see the Libyanization of them all.
Right.
And so then who benefits from that? Well, certainly the Zionists benefit.
And they benefit because they basically become the ruling power globally.
Yes. Yes. And in that case, then we're all Palestinians.
Right.
Who else benefits? Maybe those who help them. So if you roll over, you might get overlooked, but generally what has been my experience and what I have said to other members of Congress who have not shown courage when it was needed is that you may think you can live for another day, but eventually they're going to come for you too.
Right.
And that has happened so many times. So maybe it's these extra days of, relatively speaking, these extra days of life that are so valuable to them that they would go along with the plan. And if that is the case, that their day is going to come too. I look at Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, who are going along with the destruction of West Asia now, and hope that they understand that their days are numbered as well, because these different plans that have been written, the Yunnan plan, the A Clean Break plan by the Project for a New American Century, by the authors of Project for a New American Century plan, they all envision the destruction of Saudi Arabia as well.
Right.
So you cooperate today, you live today, but you're going to die tomorrow with these guys. And I think, what is it that you told me the story of the scorpion and the nice lady, and then the frog, and the frog is nice, and then the scorpion says, well, you knew I was a scorpion. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So there are people who are who are going along with this, and you would think that they would be on the side of protecting the United States because the United States has been very good to them. But that go along to get along class is going to be, look, this is what I was told by a rabbi. I was told I can make things all right for you, but you have to agree to come under my stable. That was the exact word that was used. And so if all the world is under somebody's stable, then we're there's no such thing as liberty. There's no such thing as dignity. There's no such thing as identity. And the question you ask is, do we want a humane society? This is a very important question.
Right.
Because our very humanity now is at stake.
Right.
And you're right, with the technology that they have, heck, we're already obsolete.
Right. My experience is that the leadership believes in slavery. And the reason I think they canceled the slave trade was they didn't see a way to control, you know, to keep it under control. And so they thought that they were better off canceling it. But now that they have the technology to reintroduce it, I think they, whether it's mind control, whether it's chipping, whether it's using, you know, chips in your arm to interact with the financial system, I think they've got and they're basically, if you look at what they're prototyping, you know, how human can they make a robot and how robotic can they make a human? And I think, you know, part of that is deciding which they prefer. I don't think they, you know, I think they're just prototyping and they'll decide as they go. But the reality is...
Yes, I agree with you.
Right. So it's extremely important to me that 5 to 10% of the people who need to act, you know, because as you said, we don't need everybody, need to understand that we're dealing with people who see themselves as a different species. And their intention towards us is not human. And they understand one thing, and that's power.
They understand one thing.
Right.
So there's this Muslim imam. Well, I don't have to say it. There's this imam who believes that the foundation for humanity is going to come from the Christian Orthodox Church. Now, this is very interesting to me. You know, I'm not what one would call, even despite the fact that I grew up as a Catholic, went to Catholic elementary school, Catholic high school, almost went to Catholic college, university, almost went to Notre Dame.
Right.
And, but his thinking forced me to refine my own thinking on the, you know, the whole slavery issue, the genocide issue, because it's been the Vatican that's been involved in those activities.
Right. The Vatican, to me, the Vatican is the number one stinker in the party.
But now, I'm not, because I don't know the history as well,
right,
but I don't know that the Christian Orthodox Church has been involved in such heinous practices. They certainly weren't involved.
My impression is no. No, because the Christian Orthodox split. And that's, you know, that represents part of the tension with Russia. Because they split from the papacy.
That's right. So there might be an answer to our 5% to 10% by just recognizing who our allies are. Maybe we've got allies we don't even know about. And maybe the allies that we have are because they understood that there was something else that was
right.
Inhuman that was operating a long time ago.
Well, I think that people who are opposed to inhuman haven't found each other yet. And that's where the divide and conquer has been so successful.
Yes.
You know, it's really funny because at various times, there are two people from Congress who I've been, or really three, I've been very supportive of. And each time I'm supportive of them, I get these crazy calls. I think I sent one of them to you. And, so somebody said, well, Cynthia McKinney, she's hardly what I would call a constitutionalist. And so I started to recite all the things you had done, which are some of the most fearless things anyone in Congress has ever done to defend the Constitution. And yet they have a picture in their head.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll give you the example because I'm still trying to calm down from it. I was on the phone with a wonderful relative tonight who's going on and on and on about how horrible Trump is and how great Obama was. You know, I kept saying, look, Obama gave $27 trillion. You know, that's our entire retirement savings. He just gave it to the banks. How is that? Tell me how that is helping the little people. Tell me how that is.
Well, Catherine, here comes the importance again of hashtag unrigged. Imagine if we can convene, well, our initial goal was to convene 435 meetups of totally, vastly different types of people, but put them all in the same chat room if we couldn't put them in the same physical room.
Right.
And then let's just hash it out. Let's just go at it and with moderation so that each of these chat opportunities or physical opportunities, presence opportunities is moderated in a way that's fair for everybody to have their voice heard.
Right.
And then come out with a consensus statement. Now, imagine if we can do that. Then all of a sudden, we can find those allies that we never thought were our allies because of the efficacy of the divide and rule tactic.
Right, right.
So this putting me in a room with that gentleman, or putting me in a chat room with that gentleman, I'm not afraid to go there. I'm willing to go there.
Right.
So now, is that person willing to meet me halfway? And if so, then that's the only way we can defeat the dividing rule.
Right. Right. And I have to, you know me, I have to make my plug for mathematics, because I think this all keeps coming back to the budget. And I think you have to look at how the money works. And the reason everybody thinks there's no money is, one, because you're stealing trillions left and right. But the other thing is, when you run the money dirty as opposed to clean, and when you run it unproductive as opposed to productive, then you make life difficult for all the other money. So if I'm running 3 gas stations and 2 restaurants to launder money, I'm putting the honest business people out of business because they can't compete with somebody who doesn't have to turn a profit. So, you know, so the dirtier the money gets, the worse it makes it for everybody else. So whether the productivity is, you know, is poor or negative, and whether, you know, the crime is off the charts, all these things have to be dealt with, and it comes back down to the budget. And if you look at, you know, we whether through the government money or the private money, we're financing our enemies, and you're going to have to shift the money.
Now, I'm just thinking out loud with you, Catherine, and this is totally off the top of my head. But if we look at the Million Man March, what hashtag unrig has the possibility of becoming is a local organizing committee for just what you're talking about, shifting the money. Now we've got a nucleus of people. The reason they came is because they care. They came and they acted. So these are people who are willing to act. And they came and they thought, they reflected. And so we have their best wisdom at our disposal as to how we can relocate that economic activity that provides growth for our community rather than.
So let's talk about practical stuff. Because what really needs to happen is you need to be in a position, whether you're on Skype or whether you're on FaceTime or whether you're here in person, you need to be in a position to lead conversations. Lots and lots of conversations between now and the election. So what do you need to be able to make it energizing for you to do that?
Well, basically, what I have begun the process of building up my website so that we can have our independent means of communication.
Right.
We were denied access to the millions of people who are already in place on meetup.com or meetup.org. We were denied that because the legal department at Meetup said, we applaud your activity to bring people together. That's what Meetup is for. But we don't like the fact that you are including the alt-right. Now, alt-right doesn't even have a definition. I mean, it's not clearly defined. It's a self-defined political positioning. But Meetup denied us access to their community. So,
well, because they don't believe in democracy.
Clearly, they don't believe in democracy.
Right.
But it also exposes that Meetup is a tool that has been used by certain people.
Right.
So I went on the Meetup website and I noticed that the Anti-Defamation League can sponsor 1,087 Meetups. And the Anti-Defamation League is this organization that spied on people, illegally called people anti-Semitic, had to pay a couple in Colorado $8 million because they call them anti-Semitic, and they weren't.
Wow.
And so Anti-Defamation League, fine, welcome. Honest, engaged citizens of the United States from the entire political spectrum, not welcome. So that exposes Meetup, who Meetup really is. Okay, then we went to Facebook.
I got, just to let you know, years ago when they first started, I got kicked off of Meetup in the first week. Yep. Yeah, I wanted to do circles to let people do basically financial action clubs to help them understand how the money worked in their neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
So it was little like little study groups. Yeah, we were kicked off in the first week.
There might be some synergy here in what actually there is. And then after, he's like, I'm walking in your footsteps. You know that. Anyway, I'm walking in Catherine Austin.
Now, can I tell you, we've all been trying to figure out the same thing our whole life. So we're just trying to be free and help other people be free. And we've been doing it for, you know, decades. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. It didn't start with us. You know, the past generation, you know, your ancestors and my ancestors have been trying to do it for a long time. Everybody wants to be free.
Everybody wants to be free. That's right. And so, okay, now you have given me renewed vigor in establishing my independent path, not reliant on Facebook, not reliant on any of these mediating technological, very popular,
right,
that are not under my control.
Well, I go back to the story of Gideon. You don't need thousands. You only need 300, but they have to be faithful and competent. And Facebook and Google and Meetup are not faithful or competent.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And that's what, and we've learned the hard way now. Okay, so what I'm doing is I'm building the capacity on my website. And I need to be able to basically live. I have the, as I've described it, the student loan dragon breathing fire down my back, because of course my PhD, you know, I enjoy it's really a shame the position that the United States government now puts young people and people who want to advance in their education, the position it puts them in.
Right.
It's totally unnecessary.
Right.
But in order to get the PhD from a university in the United States, they're asking me to pay more than my house note.
So basically what you need is you need a flow of supporters. You need regular support. So we can donate at your website, right?
You can donate at my website, and I'm building in the capacity for subscription. And
Perfect.
You're right. Just like if I had 300 people who were regular subscribers, I would
right.
be able to devote my time to thinking this through and then really being a worthwhile partner to you, so that we actually are the two of us working. I'm working the politics, you're working the money, but we're working to free our people.
So here's my dream. My dream is that you get a base of supporters who are basically giving you monthly support. Everyone, it's a diverse group. You're not dependent on anybody. It's coming into your website. You control it. And that gives you the ability between now and the end of next year. So let's just say for 2 years at a minimum to lead a real conversation of nuts and bolts. Okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to get the train back on the tracks? Because it needs to be a conversation.
Yes.
Have you ever heard the description, the third rail? Do you know what the third rail is? See, you grew up in the South.
The third rail is the electrified rail that you don't touch,
right?
Right.
Right. So in a transit system, you know, the train runs on the two tracks, and then there's a little piece that goes over to the third rail, and that's the power line. Meetup is it?
Yes.
Meetup is an organization to facilitate conversations that don't touch the third rail. You and I want to have conversations that touch the third rail. Now, here's what I believe.
Yes.
I'm not a politician. It takes a certain kind of gift to be a really great politician. And great politicians know how to lead complex conversations. I think you're a great politician. I think you know how to lead this conversation. I think you're really good at it. I ran around Dhaka in Bangladesh for a week with you. couldn't keep up. I couldn't keep up. So I want to see, I want to do whatever I can to help you lead that conversation. And I think there are a lot of people who want to do that. So it's a matter of it coming together. And I love the idea of it coming together through your website. So all things Cynthia McKinney, everybody listening to this, go donate. Can we sign up for an email list so that you have our names on your list? Okay. And then as soon as you have the subscription set up, you just come back, you let me know, you let everybody in the email list know, and let's start to build you, you know, what should we call ourselves? What do we call ourselves? The Cynthia, the Cynthia supporters. I don't know. We'll come up with a name.
We'll come up with a name. That's right.
We'll come up with a name, but we want to be that, because this is a conversation. We need to get in the nuts and bolts of real conversation. Our third quarter wrap up is called Local Power: How We Lost It, How We Get It Back.
Yes, yes. I'm thinking, this is just off the top of my head again, but I'm thinking, you know, maybe what we really need, since the drums of war are beating so loudly, maybe we need a circle of peace, and maybe that's what we could call ourselves, is the circle of peace. And we're just going to go everywhere to deliver the message that war is not the answer, and that inhumane treatment of each other is never the answer. And I believe that we can reach that spiritual level where we understand that it's the future of humanity that is at stake. And if we want to live, and that is with every sense of the L-I-V-E, we want to live,
right,
then we've got to change everything down to our culture.
The person, one of the people I most respect in terms of real solutions, is a guy named Robert Axelrod. He's a professor in Michigan, and I talked with you about him, and he's got a book called The Evolution of Cooperation. One of the things he says is, in a very academic way, he says the same thing you've taught me, which is, you know, you got to call out names. And what he's saying is, if somebody can go around the world and destroy Libya and then come back and be socially acceptable, there are no solutions, because you have to hold people accountable. And the way you hold them accountable is shun them. And I come back to the money. If we're going to keep financing our enemies, if we're going to keep financing the people who are trying to kill us, if we're going to finance people who are trying to kill us and pay them, you know, and pay for the weapons they're using to kill us, there are no solutions. So we've got to shift the money away, you know, out of our enemies and into the pockets of people, institutions, governments who can, you know, who can use the money well and according to the law. So I just think this is...
Yeah, it's not rocket science, but it takes a Catherine Austin fit to put it together, you know, because those who have the least good intention in the political sphere are the ones who have the most resources. They have the most money.
Right. Right.
And then people like me, who really have the best intentions and want to do what's right for everybody, just can't put it together. And so you're teaching me how to build a community, a circle of peace, a circle of supporters who want the same thing as me and who are able to help me work at this full time.
Right.
So that we
right.
can come closer to achieving our common goal.
Right. Right. And I just have to say, you know, whatever the ideology, if you just run the money according to the law, you know, most of the ideological problems go away.
Yes.
It's quite amazing. Right. I'm sitting here looking at one of those little British cover things on my desktop. It says, keep calm and do the math. Okay, so All Things Cynthia McKinney, what's the URL? All Things Cynthia McKinney?
AllThingsCynthiaMcKinney.com.
Okay, well.
And there's a donate button on every page. Yeah. And you can
and where do we on there's a donate button. How do we sign up for the email updates?
There's a place on every page to sign up as well. Sign up for the newsletter, I think is what it says.
Okay. What can we do if we want to write, because congressmen are coming back, you know, now they're meeting in their districts. How do we stop war?
Okay. We have to say to them that the vote that they cast for 3364 is a vote of shame for them. And that they must now do everything in their power to reverse the steps toward war that legislation, that now law takes.
Right.
I would just put it to them just like that. You got to walk it back.
Should we ask them why they signed the AIPAC pledge and why it isn't a conflict of interest?
Okay, so now here's what, this is very interesting. So DeFazio, Pete DeFazio, of course, I know him very well, and he was the one who was confronted with the AIPAC pledge. And of course, he said, well, I don't know what that is. So now what we have to do is be more, I think we need to be more specific than that. And the reason we need to be more specific is because now what has happened since I have changed the dynamic of the pledge. Now, the UK still has a pledge. And so I have brought attention to the UK pledge because that was very similar to the US pledge, the AIPAC pledge. Uh-huh. But now what they do is they demand of candidates to write a paragraph, and then that paragraph will contain certain information. So it's not a pledge, but it's a statement. Now,
right. What
does that, what I did was I walked through the candidates for the most expensive House race in the country. And that was the race in the 6th District of Georgia to replace Tom Price, who was tapped by President Trump to become the Secretary of Health. So I looked at the $25 million John Ossoff candidacy and the $25 million Karen Handel candidacy. So this is $50 million spent for a House seat.
Wow.
That should give you some indication of the power that the Zio-Con placed in maintaining their grip and their control over the U.S. Congress, which they have—it's their play. It's their playing field now.
You know, it's interesting if you look at who's backing the balanced budget amendment. You know, it looks like basically the WASPs have decided to throw handcuffs on the Congress so the Zio-Con control can't hurt them.
Okay. Now, I hadn't thought about that. You are so good at throwing out these little pearls that I have to contemplate and read.
Well, I'm just looking at, you know, I'm just looking at who's who. And one group looks like the Pilgrims, and the other groups look like the Zio-Cons. And it looks like the Pilgrims are trying to checkmate the Zio-Cons out of the, you know, you got control of Congress. It won't mean anything by the time we're through with you.
Well, now, you're absolutely right. In that one of the objectives that I heard
just sort of floating around. This was during my great ordeal in the 2006 campaign, was that ultimately Congress would be irrelevant anyway. And so I could see where that could be the goal. And so now what does that mean for some people? Does that mean an imperial presidency? What exactly does that mean? So anyway, I need to go back and think about that and then reanalyze it in light of our Pilgrim Zion paradigm.
Right.
Which I think is exactly the way things are sort of divided up now.
Right.
Okay, so anyway, along those same lines, so you have a Zion candidate, John Ossoff, who studied under Madeleine Albright and who touts on his website that he enjoys a close relationship with Michael Oren, the former U.S. Ambassador to the U.S. from Israel. Not only that he's visited Israel several times, you know, and he goes through the whole thing. So on his website, he clearly sets out what his, who he is, his identity, clearly set out. Karen Handel, on the other hand, is a Republican candidate, woman. She kind of plays up her Republican roots as well as the fact that she's a woman, but not really so much. But the Georgia delegation, the Georgia congressional delegation is all male. But now, because Karen Handel was the one who pulled that election off, then now it has one woman there. But now, does the presence of that one woman actually make a difference in terms of war? No, it doesn't, because clearly Karen Handel voted for 3364.
Right.
So she voted for the sanctions bill. Now, why would she do that? Because, and she just got there. She literally just arrived and she's voting for war already. Because 3364 was one of those bills that you can say the train left the track and the engine is smoking. And any political person who couldn't see that is blind.
Right.
So you get on board that train. Now, what Karen Handel and John Ossoff both did is the language on their website, this is while they are candidates, the language on their website is Hamas, Iran, and Hezbollah. And the military, remember I told you that the pledge that I was asked to sign, which was actually a pledge on AIPAC letterhead, stipulated the military superiority of the Israeli military. So the 4 points that are in common on Assad's website and Karen Handel's website is Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, and you know, military thing. And I'm going to be honest with you. Karen Handel is not exactly the kind of person who has spent a lot of time studying this issue.
Right.
I doubt if Karen Handel could tell you the countries that surround Iran, could tell you the history
right.
of how North Korea exists or the countries that surround North Korea. I mean, you know, she's not someone who is noted for any type of erudition at all. And yet, she comes in because now she's got this on her website, this is who she is, and at the end of the day, the Ziocons, whether it was John Ossoff or Karen Handel, they still got their vote.
Right.
They're counting their votes, and they still got their vote. So the members of Congress are there as a result of the conspiracy of the PAC, the lobbyists, the entire economic financial organization of Washington, D.C. is run and driven by Ziocon. So if you want to get that money for your campaign, if whether it's Emily's List, the Sierra Club, I mean the women's organizations, the garden club, you name it, I went to Peace Pack and I said, please endorse me. And they said, well, you have to justify why we need to endorse you. And I had just come from speaking against the Iraq war in the Georgia legislature. Well, you know, and it boiled down to the fact that I didn't sign the pledge.
Right.
So
do you remember the scene in The Godfather where Michael says to Tom, look, you're not a wartime consigliere. It's not your fault you're not a wartime consigliere. Do you remember that scene?
No.
Do you know what I mean by a wartime consigliere? When the families would war and they'd have to go hit the mattresses, then the consigliere really needed to be a wartime consigliere.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Right, so the consigliere is the guy who delivers the Godfather's messages to the team. All messages go from the Godfather through the consigliere, so the Godfather always has deniability. There's no legal trail.
Yes.
Because it goes through. Yes. Okay, so, but when you have a wartime consigliere, that's you need somebody who can handle a war because you're going to have to give orders to kill a lot of people, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so what just happened with Rents Priebus moving out of Chief of Staff and John Kelly moving in? They just moved in a wartime consigliere. Now, that war may be, may be what happens when Mueller empanels a grand jury. And that war may be, you know, when with the Ziocons trying to create a war. Because remember, if you look at Mattis and Kelly, they watched the U.S. military destroyed by a partnership of Pilgrims and Ziocons trying to take, you know, the U.S. military to war all around the world. So they've watched the crazy people, you know, almost destroy the U.S. military. And they're not, I don't think Mattis and Kelly are so interested in letting it happen again.
Okay. Well, I have to think about that because honestly, I haven't given that much attention to Mattis and Kelly and who they really are.
Mattis and Kelly made an agreement at the beginning of the administration, apparently, and I believe this is probably true, that both of them would never leave the country, be out of the country at the same time. At least one of them would be in the country at all times. That was a national security decision.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm totally unaware of that, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. What is happening in Washington right now, I mean, if you're the Globe, you've been spending a fortune paying the Clintons, who were just the front men, you know, to basically engage in massive treasonous violations of both U.S. law and international law. And everybody's been in on it. And the foreign interference in U.S. elections has been unbelievable and off the chart. You know, and if you made a list of the 20 worst offenders, my guess is Russia would not be in the top 20.
Right.
Right. So Israel would be in the top. The Saudis would be in the top. The Chinese would be in the top. Yeah. Everybody, you know, it's a very big list. Right. Everybody's been buying somebody.
Right.
And it's bad. That's and all of Washington is terrified. Because whether it's the pedophilia, whether it's the, you know, foreign interference in elections in the United States and U.S. interference in every election in every country around the world, you know, not to mention destroying a whole series of country. I mean, there's 100% foreign interference everywhere.
Yes. Yes. Right. That's right.
Right. So I think they're watching political leadership, which is acting very insecure and acting either psychopathic or, you know, it's psychopaths or scaredy cats. There are very few adults in the room, and Trump and his team are, you know, the presidency is not an entry level position, and he made the mistake of making Sessions AG. You know, and there's no doubt about it. What Sessions did was he totally screwed him. It's a horrible thing to do.
I hadn't even thought about it that way. I was wondering how come he didn't just fire Mueller. I think it's Mueller. I think it's horrible that you've got this going on,
right?
But who are we to stop it if Sessions won't stop it? Sessions could stop it. He doesn't have to.
I think it was a terrible mistake to appoint Sessions, and the only way you're going to get rid of him is to fire him. I mean, a serious attorney general would not let Washington descend into Mickey Mouse land. But that's what's happening. And I think Kelly and Mattis and the people who didn't want Clinton to be president and who backed Trump, you know, as he emerged, are sitting there and saying, this situation is very dangerous because lots of powerful people around the world are watching it and are trying to figure out how to take advantage. And so we need a national security team right smack in the middle.
But now Mattis is a pro-Hillary person, isn't he?
I think Mattis is, my guess is I think Mattis doesn't think much of any politician or many politicians in Washington. Mm. You know, he's a soldier, and my guess is, you know, politicians mm-hmm. are not his cup of tea. That's not,
yeah.
you know, that's not yeah. his gift. That's not his joy. But I think he looks at the world through a military prism, and he understands how dangerous. You know, you've got the United States that's been running around the world beating everybody up for 50-plus years. And if you show them your jugular, don't think they're not going to bite. They are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I think
I think there's a group of people who understand how dangerous the situation is. You know, you have a culture of politicians and people in Congress who don't take responsibility for the whole thing. It's always worked, and so they think they can, you know, I once had a partner who I said to him, was from Montserrat. I said, how come I always work and get along with people who grew up on islands? And he said, because when you live on an island, you know that what goes around comes around. And he said, America's a very big island, but nobody knows it. They don't see what goes around comes around, and they think they can just keep living off the fat of the land.
Yes, that's right. And so, you know, Catherine, I have a sadness that I discussed with my students today, your time, as well. And that is, An example is, well, I guess let me just say, it's the unreadiness of the people, the general people of the United States, to accept responsibility for
right.
what the government does.
Right.
And I posted on my Facebook page December 2014, after 19 years, the U.S. government, the State Department admitted, the historian wrote it up, that President Eisenhower approved the targeted assassination of the Prime Minister of Congo, Patrice Lumumba. Not only that, but $100,000 was authorized to be spent to accomplish the deed.
Right.
And this targeted assassination of Patrice Lumumba, I posted when the government says, okay, yes, we did it. So I posted on my Facebook page with the question, what do we, the people of the United States, owe the Lumumba family? And what do we, the people of the United States, owe to Congo? And I was shocked and stunned by the response that I got was, nothing. We didn't do it. Not our fault. I mean, I couldn't believe the irresponsibility of the people of the U.S. to accept that they, I guess maybe they, I don't know how to explain that something can happen, a disaster can happen, and you're clearly responsible for it, and you don't have any remorse, you don't want to say sorry. I don't get that.
Well, did I ever tell you, maybe we'll close with this, did I ever tell you my favorite Carl Jung story?
No.
About the woman who killed her husband?
Uh-uh.
Okay, here it comes. This is Catherine's story to describe everything. Carl Jung had a patient come to see him one day who was very poshly dressed, clearly from the upper echelons of society. She came in to see him. She said, I'm not going to give you my name because I'm only going to come once. But I believe if I tell you my story, it will help clear my situation. But I'm only coming once. Here was her story. As a young woman, she'd gone to medical school, and then shortly after graduating from medical school, she'd fallen in love with her best friend's husband. And ultimately, to reconcile the tension, and because she knew how to do it, being a doctor, she murdered her best friend, got away with it, and proceeded to marry her best friend's husband. Shortly after marrying him, she got pregnant, and she said from then on, everything went wrong. She was an accomplished horsewoman, her horses would buck, and she had to give up riding. She had beautiful wolfhounds. They died. Her daughter hated her. As soon as she was old enough to run away, she'd run off, and she had no idea where she was. She had slowly been excluded from society. She told Jung, wherever she was, the birds would stop singing. She said the birds knew.
Mm.
And she came to Jung on the theory that confessing her sins would help clear this energetically, and somehow she'd be able to reestablish herself in society. And I would say that America has the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been able to keep this going with force, but what is slowly happening is the birds have stopped singing for us. And the reality
yeah.
is whether we've, you know, whether we've been a Ziocon or a pilgrim leading this thing or somebody who's just benefiting from the cheap natural resource. I mean, let's face it, most of the land that any of us own here in the United States was built from genocide, and the big pool of
yeah.
capital was built not only from genocide, but slavery. So...
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I hear lots of people complaining about encroaching centralization and control and slavery in the United States, but I don't see anybody offering to give their land back to the Indians.
Yeah.
So I think this clearing of responsibility and acceptance, you know, there is only one pathway to get power in this world, and that is to say, you know, there is a problem and it's my problem. I'm going to take responsibility for this problem. And that is the first step towards getting power, that you need to solve the problem. So there is no solution without taking responsibility. And you have to deal, if you're going to take responsibility, you have to deal with the fact that at some level spiritually there are no secrets. The birds know.
Mm-hmm.
We can pretend all we want, but the birds know.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I want the birds on my side.
I want the birds on my side, too. That's, oh my gosh, that is such a powerful story.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've been grappling with this because I've been grappling with who is the innocent civilian when you're so complicit, where's the innocence? You know, so anyway, once again, you've given me so much to think about.
Well, I'm going to send you the link to this story. It's up on my website, so I'll send you a link. Well, Cynthia McKinney, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate, because I think many people do not understand how important and how dangerous not only the sanctions bill, now law, is, but the speed it went through and the extraordinary support in Congress in terms of votes for it. And that, you know, that not only says, that speaks to the danger of our situation.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. We're about to go over the cliff. So let's stop this, baby. Let's stop it. I don't want
Okay, well, get out and talk to your Congress critter. Get out and talk to your Congress critter.
That's right.
Cynthia McKinney, you have a wonderful day. Thank you again for joining us on the Solari Report.
Thank you, Catherine. Bye. Thank you.